Welcome to another episode of Negative War, Positive Vibes. Hugh Yanikowski and Ryan Spielborgs with you and breaking down all the latest news around Major League Baseball, which really means all the latest news around the Los Angeles Dodgers. We finally got our answer on Roky Sasaki. I'm not going to lie, Spilly, disappointing and kind of boring for me that he made the decision to go to the Los Angeles Dodgers. You and I thought that it was going to be the San Diego Padres. It didn't happen that way. The final three teams were the Padres, the Dodgers, and the Blue Jays. The Blue Jays seemed like they were probably the dark horse in this. But ho-hum, the Los Angeles Dodgers have been given a tremendous gift in Roky Sasaki as he has made that decision to join their club.
Yeah, I'm with you. I was disappointed too, but then what can you say? You can't blame Sasaki for picking the Dodgers. The Dodgers, and this is one thing that we need to consistently point out, because I know there was so much negative response to Sasaki landing with the Dodgers. The Dodgers haven't built this thing overnight. They have spent the last 20 years revamping a lot of important parts that are, you know, important for players to go to. Investment into the stadium, investment into research and development, coaching, you name it. Like, the Dodgers have built for 20 years a destination. And it's not like this happened overnight. This has been over time. And, you know, to land a guy like Sasaki, and we can break it down pretty simply. Couple things to note. You know, if you were looking for the place where he markets the best, it's the Dodgers. I mean, like, he's going over there. And granted, yes, he did get a large international signing bonus pool money, but, you know, he's going to make more money. It's like a college quarterback with an NIL. You know, you can go to a smaller program, but the bigger programs are going to give you more money because of the marketing and the group of NIL cash that they have for you. So with Yamamoto, with Otani, and now Sasaki, I mean, from a Japanese perspective, that's amazing. Like, if I was somebody in Japan, I wanted him to go to the Dodgers. I didn't want him to go to the Padres. I wanted to see this super team with the Dodgers, with the three best Japanese players right now on one team. If I was a fan of Japanese baseball, which I am. And then beyond that, CJ, you think about the small things, the things that he said mattered to him. Protect himself from media. Well, Dodgers do an exceptional job of that. Joel Wolf's office, Wasserman Media, is right there. It's right by UCLA. So you have your agent and whatever group of people right there. You don't have to worry about them being in Toronto. I think there's a bunch of ripples that affect the industry because of this. First off is, I think there's going to be clamoring for an international draft. I've told you this. So I talked to you about this on radio. I think a lot of organizations are going to be upset about the Dodgers getting the best available international free agent after just winning a World Series, where it didn't feel like it was fair. It didn't feel like it was a fair fight.
All right, let's stay there on the international draft and kind of wondering whether or not this thing makes sense, right? Of course, Major League Baseball and the union tried to work something out. It didn't happen with the last CBA. It feels like potentially there'll be more pushback, but who's really going to push back? It's going to be the teams, not the players, right? Ultimately, with the players, they want anybody coming into the game to have the greatest opportunity to make the greatest amount of money. They don't want to put restrictions on it. But I do think from a competitive balance standpoint, there's going to have to be some kind of adjustment. Whether it's, you know, I wondered about Sasaki and the timing of this whole thing and how maybe it was slowing down the market just a little bit. Should he have been able to sign during that open period, there may be an adjustment that has to be made on age. But I'm also wondering now, like you said, whether or not we need to have this international draft and how do you make it fair, and what that would do ultimately, it would still slow guys down. We would not see pre-25-year-old probably Japanese players coming over because they're going to want full control of where they go because they've already been pros now in the biggest league in Japan. And the same thing for any Korean players that would want to come over. It seems to me that's where this thing would be headed. That's where some owners will probably make a push. There's still going to be a great opportunity to make big money. If Sasaki waited 2 years, he could have got the Yamamoto deal, right? Better than $300 million if he continued to be as good as everyone thinks he's going to be. I mean, I'm on board with it. I'm on board with the idea. And I know that maybe you have to separate Asia from what we have in the Latin American countries, because it's a completely different product. You're getting guys at different ages. But based on what we just saw, I mean, it's a time in which the Dodgers are already spending a lot of money. They're coming off a World Series championship, and then they get the best international, quote-unquote, kind of amateur free agent who has to go through the posting system. Not ideal, right? Not ideal, because it's not only that they got him, but they're going to have him for prime years because he came over at 23 years old, an international draft that maybe for those under 25 slowed that down a little bit. I don't know how worried I am about a CBA disruption coming up here in a couple of years, but based on what we just saw this winter, that is going to be a really, really significant issue.
I do agree with you. I think there's a significant issue as far as, okay, how do you get competitive balance throughout the league? Because we know the Pirates weren't involved in the international, you know, market here. You know, Sasaki crossed them off, Colorado crossed off. You know, you can go through all these different organizations. It boiled down to the markets you would expect, which is not fair. You know, you would like to have Minnesota having a chance. You would like to have all these different teams having a chance. And in the case of an international free agent, he's still, in a way, picking where he wants to go. If you do get an international draft, and I'm with you, you could probably do an international draft specific to Asian organizations right now, because those players can go play professionally in Korea or in Japan. They have leverage. They have an opportunity to go somewhere else, or they can go to college. So they have that. Yeah, like a kid in Venezuela does not have that. That's a problem. Dominican, you don't have that. So you have a problem. So could I foresee a scenario of an international draft with Japanese Korean players? Yeah. Is that, how many rounds is that? Maybe one or two at the most. So, you know, does it solve all the issues? No. But does it prevent a team like the Dodgers from getting Sasaki? Yes. But does that also mean Sasaki has to sign if he gets drafted? If the Atlanta Braves would have had the international free agent, you know, draft Japanese version, Korean version, and the Braves had the first overall pick and he gets drafted by the Braves and he's like, I want to go play there. If it was by the Rockies, he goes, I don't want to go. I'm going to go play in the MPB and then I'll sign as a free agent a couple years from there. So that's going to be the reality, is even if you do put into place an international draft, CJ, there's no guarantee that the player would still choose to sign with that team.
Well, that's, and then you build that language in, right? So then you have a slotting system where players know if they get taken, whatever pick it's going to be, if they're going to declare themselves eligible, then there's probably got to be language in there that you can't go back to. You have to take what the slot value is. And I know that's not probably ideal. And like you said, I probably wouldn't even be a full round, because we don't see too many players coming over that have already played at that level at that age, right? So we are talking about a very small group, but probably have to have some kind of language in there, slotting system, whatever it may be, and that's what you get. It's a little bit different what we're seeing with the international kids coming out of Latin America, where they're free to negotiate bonuses. The pushback, I think, from the Dodgers would be, we didn't win this because we had some kind of financial advantage, right? He didn't come to us because we were able to offer him the most money. Eventually, they were able to acquire quite a bit of international signing bonus pool money to add on and get the $6.5 million. That's what he got. We had wondered about that whole situation, how motivated he was. Clearly, he wanted some money, right? If he was just okay with the Dodgers, they would not have been scrambling to go from 5.1 to 6.5 million in their bonus pool over the last few days leading up to this thing. So that was obviously part of the motivation. And his team probably, I don't know how much the Chiba Lotte Marines appreciate it, but they get 20%. On top of that, right, there is a posting fee with this. Had he signed for $1 million, they would have got $200,000. That probably would have been a little irritating for them. So at least they'll get a little bit over $1 million in a posting fee. But again, that's where the Dodgers can argue about this, and other teams like the Yankees that feel like they may have an advantage, is that this wasn't a financial situation. This was a market situation and everything else that you talked about and what they have there in Los Angeles. So that's going to be the pushback, but it's just not ideal that the team is, that's on top right now, that is going to have this monster payroll this year, that just won a World Series and is a very desirable place to play, that 23-year-old studs that are coming over from Asia are going, yeah, I'll just go over there and it's not going to cost them very much. That is probably not great for our game.
It's not, CJ, it's not. And that's where, you know, people have been clamoring about, hey, this is not really that fair. I will argue too, baseball is better if you have like a monster team. I mean, like, it's good for who's not going to want to watch the Dodgers when they come into town? When the Dodgers go to Atlanta, everyone's going to go watch that. When the Dodgers come to Colorado, sign us up. We want to see the stars. It's not bad for the sport from a marketing perspective, from a national perspective. Getting the Dodgers in the World Series this year against the Yankees brought more eyeballs than we ever had in the last 10 years. Fantastic. It's great. You know, financially for the sport, it's great. But from a competitive standpoint where you have this absolute buzzsaw now, and it feels like because of the deferrals and how they have managed their assets, they're in a position where it feels like they're unbeatable. They're unbeatable. And then beyond that, you know, because Sasaki doesn't cost them $20 million a year, CJ, they have the financial flexibility to add the best left-handed reliever on the market, which is Tanner Scott. Yep. And now you're just like, what the hell? How do you beat them?
Yep, one after another. I mean, listen, yeah, they have put together a super team. There's been a lot of super teams that have been put together on paper. This one, though, does seem a little bit different, especially coming off a World Series. Maybe we see our first repeat winner since 2000. It has been 25 years since we've had a repeat winner in the World Series. I wanted to ask you this, some speculation. So much is going to happen between now and then. But they are going, the Los Angeles Dodgers and the Chicago Cubs are going to open up in Japan. If everybody is healthy, how is Dave Roberts going to set his rotation? Here we are, you and I having this conversation on January 20th. Is it Yamamoto and Sasaki, or is it Snell and Sasaki? Is it Snell and Yamamoto? If you were to guess who starts those two games in Japan, that'll be in the middle of March, what do you think? Who do you think it's going to be?
It's funny you see that, because I mean, my gut tells me it should be like Tyler Glasnow and Tony Gonsolin. Because you don't want to, I mean, I don't know. I like, you could maybe start like a guy that's going to end up being an option down in the minor leagues. I mean, you want,
no, you got to win those games. Those are big league games.
I hear you, yeah. but it's also you're trying to speed up these starters process so that they're pitching in mid March.
Yeah.
Like, you want Blake Snell peak. I mean, at least like ready to go mid March. Like, that guy wasn't even ready till June last year, July.
Yeah. That's a great point. And we think about, we like these things. They're fun and all, but you're absolutely right. And there were some complaints about it and the exhaustion of going over there and having to start everything a little bit earlier. But this is the decision that Major League Baseball has made with the idea of growing the game. But they'll start, those games are on the 18th and the 19th. So essentially 9 days before the regular season starts, which is significant when it comes to your spring training setup. The only reason I ask that, one, because I am interested to see what they would do, and we'll see as we get closer where Dave Roberts is going to go with that. I'm sure he's looking forward to being asked that just about every day in spring training. But then when I was thinking, okay, they play the two games, then they have 7 days off before they actually start their regular schedule. They'll have a three-game set with the Tigers to open up at home. I'm getting a little greedy here, because then the Braves visit the Los Angeles Dodgers, and I'm wondering if there's any outside chance we actually get Sasaki's first start. If for some reason he doesn't start in Japan, then they got 9 days off. They still go with some of their big guns. That's kind of where I was going. I'm just wondering. But 31st, 1st, 2nd, March 31st, April 1st, and 2nd is that three-game series. And who knows? Maybe, small chance that we'll be able to get that one. So there was my selfishness disguised in that question.
There's no selfishness. I think it's fair. I mean, I want to see Sasaki's debut. I'm looking at the Dodgers roster. My gut tells me, CJ, a game is going to be started in some combination in Japan by Bobby Miller, Landon Knack, or Ben Kasperius. It's going to be
really
one of those guys is going to get a start. I'm willing to grow out a beard forever. Like, I'm telling you, there. Why would you risk some of these? Again, these players' careers matter to me. They do, but long term. I mean, yeah. I'm not trying to put any of these guys in significant jeopardy. I'm looking for guys that pitched in winter ball, that just finished winter ball, that were starters in winter ball. Those are the guys that I want pitching in Japan.
Yeah, I think that would be probably met with some pushback as well from the baseball community and Major League Baseball, and how big these games are and how important they are to both teams. As much as we feel like the Dodgers might win this division by 15, 20 games, doesn't always work out that way. So, we got a long way to go before we get there. I do think the Snell point that you made, we know Otani's not going to be ready. And even Sasaki, remember, didn't have a full year last year. And so they're probably going to want to be very careful with how they nurse him along. But certainly a six-man rotation feels like it's in the future for the Los Angeles Dodgers, which brings us to our next story, which you talked about, and that is the fact that Tanner Scott has now joined this team. We don't have the numbers as far as what kind of money, if any, is going to be kicked down the can as they have gotten so good with these deferrals. But it's coming in at 4 years and $72 million. The estimates were 4 and 56. That puts it at an $18 million AAV. Again, that'll probably come down with some deferrals. But just when you were kind of irritated with the fact that the Dodgers got Sasaki, they go out there and they get the best reliever available this offseason. You have a problem with what's going on here? I know we kind of touched on it a little bit. It's a free market. It's the way that it works. But the Dodgers are in a place now where some of these estimates are coming in around $375 million for their luxury tax payroll. That's going to come with some big, hefty fines with it. But this is the team with all the cash right now.
Do I have a problem with it? Yes, I wanted this player to be on a different team. I wanted Tanner to be with Baltimore. But I also understand it's really hard to win back-to-back World Series in 4 years for this guy. He was also the Ohtani killer. So he owned Ohtani, so might as well just put him on the team. If you have a guy that can get Ohtani out left on left in big scenarios, and he did a really good job last year with the Padres, let's just add him. Hmm. Let's get him. And so I think if you're putting a team together and you're the Dodgers, no-brainer. Yeah, give me this guy. If you were the other teams that were out there and kind of tiptoeing like, should we go, 4 years and 60, 65, and you missed out on this player, and now he ends up being a perennial all-star. If he ends up closing, I mean, he's getting paid essentially Josh Hader money. Hmm. If he ends up being Josh Hader light, you're so regretful for your decision not to push harder.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing, like, as much as we don't like what the Dodgers are doing, cause they're buying everything, other organizations have the chance to do the same thing. Like there are teams out there that have just the same amount of capital as the Dodgers, but they're not doing it. They're not doing it. Like,
nobody has their TV contract.
Nobody has their TV contract.
They drew nearly 4 million fans last year, which I did find interesting, by the way, looking, 2019 was their franchise high. They did not pass that number last year. They actually fell a little bit under with Shohei Ohtani there, just under what they did in 2019. But they're the only team that's knocking on the door, 4 million fans. They have the monster television contract that's not going anywhere, right? Other teams have dealt with the instability of their television contracts either going away or getting cut. Certain percentages, as we've seen with some of these FanDuel teams going back, teams like the Reds and the Brewers and others, it's been a huge problem for them financially, and they have adjusted accordingly. And that's where the conversation has gone with the money. They are a revenue juggernaut. Yeah, there are other millionaires out there. We don't know what they're making and what they're losing at the end of the day, because none of those numbers are public outside of what the Atlanta Braves do because they're publicly traded. But other than that, we're left to guess, right? The comments from Tom Ricketts is we're trying to break even every year. Remember having a conversation with Rangers owners and even listening to them talk to the media and say, we don't pull any money out of this team. We're not making money off this team in the sense that we're taking profit. Now, you got to take that for what it's worth, right? Because there's no way to prove it or back it up. But I don't think that it's fair to say that other teams have this level of capital. Yes, they could be spending more money. Shohei Ohtani is obviously bringing in a ton for them. A lot of teams could have went there as well, but he was going to go to the Dodgers anyway. I mean, let's be honest. No matter what the offers were, he was going to the Dodgers to get that what will eventually be $700 million. I am not a believer in a cap. I saw a poll go around for MLB trade rumors where about two-thirds of the 30,000 or so people that voted on it said they'd be in favor of a cap. That is still a no for me. The money is there. It's going somewhere. And a cap is not going to help it. A cap only helps the owners do even better. So I don't know if there's a solution. What I definitely hope is that, as we mentioned earlier, as we get closer to the end of the CBA, that this is a non-issue. I know it's going to come up, but we cannot have any version of a work stoppage, not after what we had last time, where we had a 99-day lockout, and the season started a little bit late because of it. Can't have it. I don't have the solution, Spilly, but the salary cap is definitely not it.
No, well, and the salary cap, I mean, is going to be owners asking for it, not players asking for it. Players are thriving. What are they complaining about? I don't know what the argument would be right now for players against owners, other than owners fighting owners about the way that the CBA is currently structured. That's it. I see owners fighting owners. I don't see owners fighting players, because the players really have nothing to argue about other than we'd like to see pension numbers get bigger. We'd like to see more coaches on staff getting paid. I mean, like that sort of stuff, even though we've seen you know, differences in opinions there. I think players would be okay with an international draft at this point. Now that we have, you know, I was part of the very first conversation of the international draft that happened in 2011 when it was presented. It's been 15 years. And by the time we get to the CBA, that's almost 20 years of infrastructure that has supposedly been built around the international draft. So I don't know. We know that the last time we saw the international draft offered, we had an extra roster spot. Check. I don't really see what the big arguments are going to be. I mean, there's no real rule changes. There's the other than the automated ball strikes, which I don't think players are totally anti against it. So I think it's more like the owners got to figure their stuff out versus the players have to figure it out for them.
I would agree. I think there's definitely something to it. A year ago, we saw the Los Angeles Dodgers spend, according to SpotTrack, $1.4 billion in contracts. A lot of that had extensions. There was $136 million in extensions, arbitration extensions, plus the free agent money that they spent, obviously, with Yamamoto and what we saw with Shohei Ohtani. This year, the Mets are on top at $971 million, but the Dodgers are second. And this is what we start to see are these monster drop-offs, right? Where it's $971 million spent by the Mets, $477 spent by the Dodgers. So the Dodgers are in second, and they're $500 million less than what the New York Mets had spent. And then you're going to get the bottom 10 teams that are under $50 million spent so far this year. So there's been a monster disparity. Now, that's not the AAV. That's just the total money when you look at total deals. And so when you get a guy like Juan Soto, it kind of blows that whole thing out of the water. But these are some crazy, crazy numbers that we're seeing. We're at $3.8 billion spent this year already. We were at $5.5 billion last year, and off we go. But there's still all of these teams that aren't spending the money, that say they don't have the money. For some reason, I mean, deferrals are not new. It just seems that the Dodgers have figured out a way to use them better, I guess, than and most people not wanting to use them. It's very interesting the way that it's gone, but it's something that's worked really well for them. So nobody wants to see a salary cap. I don't think that's going to solve the problem. It's a matter of how aggressive your ownership group really wants to be and how many look at it as a business, how many are okay spending up to the point where we're only going to be even. I want to make $10 million a year, so that's where you put the brakes on, whatever that may be. Unfortunately, Spill, we're just never going to know what the numbers are.
No, we're never going to know what the numbers officially are. And I know the last little story we wanted to touch on was Anthony Santander. And here's a Blue Jays team that has been trying to spend that type of money. They've been trying to spend what the Dodgers have spent, what the Mets have spent, and they finally land somebody in Anthony Santander. I'm curious if you think it's a little too late, or if this is a good start. Bregman's still available. Alonso's still available. Nick Pivetta's still available. But like, as far as the relievers go, you know, you're starting to get down to Kirby Yates and you know, now that Scott's off the board, now that the Blue Jays finally landed one, they didn't get Sasaki, which we were hoping for. How aggressive can they be in the next? I mean, honestly, CJ, it's 30 days till spring training.
It's crazy, right? Yeah, I mean, listen, I think Pete Alonso's market, Alex Bregman's market, sound like they're going to come in under where they were anticipating. And Bregman may have made a big mistake by not taking Houston Astros deal that they offered him. We'll see. There's still going to be some good money out there for him, but maybe not $156 million. So it's a matter of what you want to do. I'm glad that the Blue Jays did this, right? I mean, they needed to. They've had a really difficult time signing players over the last few years. They had to overextend themselves, right? That's it. I mean, if you look at where Santander maybe was expected to land, some numbers around 4 for $80 million. 5 for $92.5 million right now, plus an option on there that could kick this thing well over, I think I should say right around $110 million. I wondered about their reluctancy potentially for the Blue Jays because there was the qualifying offer there that did not get in the way, which shouldn't have for them anyway, but right. I get a little bit worried, right? They were a second round pick and 500,000 of international. So that's good. They were not a team that went over the luxury tax, but they shouldn't be done. They need to pick their spots here. You know, we talked a lot about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and whether or not you're going to trade him. It's still not a terrible idea. I mean, you laid it out really well during the week on our show, what kind of return you could get. Then go ahead and go get Pete Alonso or Alex Bregman or both. And you're in a pretty good spot to try to contend, but you're a little stuck in the middle here still because of how good this division is. This move by itself for the Toronto Blue Jays is not enough. Santander is a nice ad. They brought in Andrés Giménez as well. They did trade for Miles Straw. He's a bench piece guy, can run. Added Hoffman to the bullpen, but it's not enough. It's not enough for me in this division. So they're trending in the right direction. Good to see them make one big move, but one by itself is not going to get it done.
No, and again, I'll use Colorado as my example. I'd love to see Toronto trade for Ryan McMahon. They need a third baseman. They need some more power. They need more power there. That's been the problem the last 2 years, is not enough power. After they lost Teoscar Hernandez and traded him to Seattle, they've gone backwards. They really have. They need more power in their lineup. So whether it's via trade or going out there and extending yourself in a, you know, free agent contract, I still think a trade makes a lot of sense. And then, of course, listen, if you can't do this, if you can't put together a playoff caliber team that's going to keep Vlad Guerrero there, you have to trade Guerrero.
Yeah,
you have to. It's not even, it's malpractice if you don't. It's like what we said with Ohtani. It was malpractice by not trading Ohtani. And we understand trying to keep him there for that short window. But the Angels went backwards 5 years because they didn't get the prospects in return.
That was an ownership call, unfortunately, and they're trying to recover from it ever since. But the news of the day, Roky Sasaki is off the board. He ends up with the Dodgers. That puts Jack Flaherty kind of in the A position of the best remaining starting pitcher that is out there, Nick Pivetta as well. The veterans, Gibson, Lance Lynn, Max Scherzer, all still out there as well. Santander off the board. If you're looking for an outfielder, it's probably Jurickson Profar at this point. Harrison Bader, Mark Canna are some pieces. Alex Verdugo is out there. Still a couple of decent DHs. You mentioned Alex Bregman's name, and hopefully now the rest of this market for the relievers picks up. David Robertson, Carlos Estevez, Kirby Yates, and others. Still some really good options that are out there for the bullpen. But things picking up, and as Billy mentioned, we are inside of a month of things getting started. The reporting dates are less than a month away with both the Dodgers and the Cubs starting earlier than that, because they'll start the season 9 days earlier in Japan. Fun stuff there. We look forward to catching up with you guys during the week. You can always hear Spilly and I on Loud Outs on MLB Network Radio. It's 1 to 4 Eastern time on SiriusXM channel 89. But this has been our podcast, Negative Work, Positive Vibes. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.